So welcome back to the show again, guys. We have a special guest in the studio. So I'm sure everybody knows who this wonderful guy is. Please introduce yourself and tell us where you've come from.
Sure. My name's Brian Harry, and I'm vice president in the developer division. I'm at Microsoft, and I'm responsible for Team Foundation Server, Visual Studio Online, and Application Insights.
Great. So you're basically the top man.
Well, for maybe for those things, Satya is the top man.
Yeah, of course. So we have a few rangers actually dropping by to ask you a few questions. So let's just literally hand over to them and go with that.
Great. Looking forward to it.
All right, let's get them in.
All right, thank you.
Well, hello, Brian.
Hey, how are you doing, Etienne?
I'm doing very well. I've been an MVP for 10 years this year.
Oh, I know it's been a while because I met you as an MVP and
you have
known you for a long time now.
this product has evolved over the years, and as an MVP, we get to talk with you once a year, sometimes more.
Yeah.
And I was wondering how did the MVP specifically for this product? I don't know if you've had MVP for other products before, but the MVP for this product, how did it help influence the direction of the product?
Sure. So, you know, the Team Foundation Server is really the first product where I had close contact with MVPs, and it's been just an absolutely fantastic experience. And I feel like we've got the best group of MVPs of any product at Microsoft, and they've helped us just immeasurably over the years, from things like understanding better what problems customers are trying to solve, better helping evaluate whether or not what we're doing is helping with those problems, to, you know, helping us think about business models of like how we're pricing it and is that attractive and does it fit with the way people are buying it, industry trends. It just helped us in virtually every way. And you know, we interact with MVPs at the summit, like, you know, we did this week.
Right.
You know, our group of MVPs, I mean, literally every day, you know, I'm exchanging mail with you, with somebody.
Yep.
On the MVP alias. We run ideas by them. We do sort of teleconferences, periodically. It's been the greatest experience I could imagine.
If you would compare like the MVPs with, let's say, because I'm sure you have a customer conference as well, and you talk with your customers and everything. And what is that like? Do you feel the interaction between us, like the MVPs, and let's say versus customer is a little different? We are biased to your product. I mean, you know,
yeah.
We really like your product, obviously. So, you know, customers sometimes are like, why should I take your product? Right?
Sure. It's definitely different than customers. I would say, first and foremost, the MVPs are willing to call me an idiot when they think I'm an idiot, and I appreciate that. Yes. And I appreciate that frankness, you know. But they know our product really well, and they know why we're doing what we're doing. It also, as you say, provides some bias.
Right.
Some of them have known us so long that they get the same tunnel vision we have. So it's important to bring in fresh people, and it's important to see the customer perspective. And I also talk to customers every day, so both are very valuable perspectives.
Cool. So I've dabbled with ALM since I started my career, maybe like 25 years ago. I was doing some Unix before, and I was using some tool on command line Unix to actually do source control.
Yeah, probably RCS or SCCS.
SCCS, that's the one. And like nobody was actually using any kind of source control in the company I was at the beginning. So it was kind of like, why are we doing that, right?
Right.
So I've kind of been in that space for quite a while. And I know you're like, let's call you the father of VSS, since you and your brother kind of created this product.
Yep.
And I was wondering, like, how did what sparked you to actually create this product?
Well, you know, that's a long story, and I won't go into all the gory details. But let me just say, in this, so we started it in 1992, and at that time, all of the source code control systems were just awful.
Right.
RCS was awful, SCCS was awful, PVCS was awful. They were all cryptic, complicated, low value, not terribly reliable, not terribly performant, hard to use systems.
Sure.
And the innovation that SourceSafe provided, it was the first version control system with a really nice GUI.
Right.
It was super simple. Anybody could use it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, we called it the project-oriented version control system, because it was the first version control system, at least in the broadly available ones, that really took configuration management of collections of files seriously, right, and mm-hmm. thought about projects and thought about reuse of projects. And that was a big, you know, that was at a time when software development was maturing and people wanted to start thinking about reusing components and sharing across larger scale applications. So it, you know, it went from nothing to hundreds of thousands and ultimately millions of users. So yeah, it was a very, very cool experience.
I'm sure, and I mean, I've used SourceAce like probably anybody that does development or did development in the 90s. I've used that quite a bit, and I've helped a customer transition to TFS from VSS. So so I mean, it was a very influential product for sure. And on the same subject, like I like to have your perspective from like let's say the 90s and VSS and where it started to what source control, specifically source control, because that's probably been your kind of like I know you're in the broad sense, but like source control is kind of your thing. And like how do you feel about like this evolution to Git maybe now and DVCS and all that? Like just to your perspective.
You know, I guess let me give you a little bit of perspective. I'll say today SourceSafe has a bit of a bad reputation, and it's not ill-deserved. The thing you always have to keep in context is SourceSafe was built in 1992.
Absolutely.
And in 1992, LANs were still novelties.
Oh, yeah.
Client-server didn't exist.
For sure.
So it was a file-share-based system, originally built on Novell NetWare, which was the file stores that we used. And it was sort of built on the technologies of the day. And, you know, I would never recommend someone investigating starting to use source control now to use SourceSafe.
For sure.
You know, any more than I would, you know, recommend you use a cassette tape. I mean, that was a great technology at a point in time. So technology moves on. Everything is now, you know, HTTP or client server or distributed or whatever. It's just the technology base has moved. The solutions are way better. They're more reliable. They're faster. They're more capable. It's been great. I've, you know, sort of followed that technology wave the whole way, participated in almost every sort of incarnation of the major technology waves. So it's been a lot of fun.
Do you feel that we're in a good space now with like DVCS? Or
I do. I think DVCS is really good. Git is really good. Git has the problem that it's complicated. I sometimes, you know, describe it as like calculus.
Right.
It's elegant and it's beautiful when you understand it. And when you don't understand it, it's just magic and you know, confusing. I think one of the things we're trying to do, one of the contributions we'd like to make to the Git ecosystem, is to figure out how to make Git approachable and make it understandable and usable without in any way tarnishing or harming the elegance and the sort of the mathematical precision of it.
Right. Well, Brian, thank you for all
thank
your explanations, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
All right. You bet.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Mattias Olausson, and I have a couple of questions to you, Brian.
Oh, great. It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. So I've heard a lot about DevOps these days, and read some really interesting articles about how Microsoft is adopting DevOps.
Yep.
So what's your take on that? How's your team been picking up that trend?
Yeah. I mean, DevOps is a pretty, I'd say, foundational trend in software development today.
Yeah.
Really, a set of practices that help an organization deliver software way more agilely, you know, and
like a mindset.
It's a whole way of thinking that changes sort of the very broken up, siloed, slow processes of delivering software into a very fluid, very automated, reliable, reproducible feedback loop that allows you to iterate rapidly. And, you know, I think we've written a lot about it. We've been on that journey for probably 4 or 5 years now of sort of gradually becoming more and more agile and adopting more originally agile practices and now DevOps practices. And, you know, it's enabled us to ship software at an amazing pace that, you know, 4 years ago I couldn't have even dreamed of. You know, we shipped every 2 years and it was a major effort, and we spent 6 months of stabilizing and orchestration, and now we ship every 3 weeks pretty much on schedule. New capabilities are just constantly streaming out.
Just imagine that with the size of your products, and it must be a challenge. So
yeah, it's hundreds of people. It's amazing.
Automation in that then.
There is, yeah.
Interesting.
It's also a journey you're never done with. I mean, you can always do more. You can always do it better. And you know, if you looked at my backlog, you'd find lots of you know, additional automation and additional process improvements.
That's true. Cool. So as part of the DevOps story, it's obviously going to be questions about how do we implement that for real in an enterprise. So we had lots of different technologies, lots of different platforms.
Yeah.
So it needs to be an open platform, obviously.
Yeah.
So I see you've done a great job with extensibility, from service hooks to enabling REST services, and now with extensibility in the UI and so on.
Yeah.
So how are we seeing that fit into the story? And
I think one of the things that sort of this era of the internet has ushered in is this world of loosely coupled products and services that one can sort of pick the best tools and put them together. And that means, and there have evolved a set of standards and conventions, let's say, of how these products talk to each other. REST and OAuth and service hooks are some of them. And so we started down that journey about 18 months ago by embracing those standards. We've done integrations with tons and tons of products through that. We've done integrations with things like Zapier, which are essentially wiring tools that allow you to wire products and services together. And that was all great. It allowed you to get sort of data integration between products. But it didn't give you experience integration. It didn't give you the ability to actually see stuff in context, data mashed up. And so that's sort of our next step in the journey that we're introducing at our Connect conference in about 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. We'll be launching our new UI extensibility for our web that allows you to plug in pages and menu commands and custom work item controls and dashboard widgets and build tasks and all kinds of stuff that actually mashes up the experience in the UI in a safe and secure and reliable way that allows anyone to extend our experience, to integrate our experience with other things, allows you to sort of tailor and customize that experience to the way you work.
Yeah. So we'll have TFS or Visual Studio Online to be our hub. We use extensibility to bring in other platforms, and we can mix and match.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. Yeah. And you know, it'll ship on Visual Studio Online first, like most things we do, is sort of in the cloud first, and then I suspect sometime early next year we'll deliver it on premises in TFS.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for
all right.
Taking
Thank
the time.
Thank you. It was good talking with you.
Thanks.
Sure.
Hi, Brian.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? I'm Vladimir Gusarov. I'm ILM Visual Studio ILM MVP and also ILM Ranger. So I have a couple of questions for you, Brian. So
oh, great.
So we met like 5 years ago, I believe, in 2010.
Okay.
You did great features of test management.
Yep.
And would basically allow us to do full traceability across requirements to testing. So
yeah.
And nowadays I see it's like getting less attention.
Yeah.
So like you're doing new great cool stuff, but test traceability is not so much affected. So what is your vision of testing and lab management, future of those technologies?
Sure, I'm happy to talk about that. I'd separate testing and lab management a little bit because we're sort of dealing with those two things separately. So our focus right now is on enabling DevOps and really about automating that flow from the developer's desktop into production and then feedback from customers, users back to developers. So right now we're really focused on automating that pipeline. So most of our testing investments right now are about that. So integration into the CI system, integration into the release management system. Also, you know, obviously one of the two big trends in the industry today are cloud and devices. And we've been doing a bunch of investments there, like integration of testing with Xamarin's cloud, with Perfecto Mobile's device test cloud, et cetera. There is a whole bunch of them that we've done. So that's kind of where we've been focusing. We still have our manual test case management system and the ability to create test plans and manage them and execute them and track progress on them. But it hasn't been our big focus for certainly the last year. Now, I think we're starting to invest back in that area. We have a very broad product. We can't invest in every area in every release.
Yeah,
I think this week you saw some work we're doing around manual testing to be able to enable people to do manual testing without having to install anything on the machine. It's all browser-based, screenshots. It's very nice. I think you also saw we're also focused on traceability, although maybe with a slightly different bent on it than we have in the past, where if you look at what we can do through that release pipeline, you have amazing traceability from the check-ins to the work items to the builds, releases, to the defects that are found, in those releases, back to the check-ins that happen. We've really been working on those kind of flows. So definitely something we still care a lot about, but the part of it that we work on certainly changes. Now, when it comes to lab management, it's kind of in a different bucket. So we put out the lab management product in 2010. So in that time, we had to build a ton of infrastructure in lab management that we really shouldn't have had to have built. It was, VM fencing that allowed you to create clusters of VMs with IPs that lived in the fence. It was machine management to be able to manage this list of environments and connect to them. Well, now all of that functionality has moved down into the lower platforms. VMware has it, System Center has it, Azure has it. That level of managing environments and machines and taking snapshots and doing all that stuff, we don't have to do it anymore. So if you think of that as lab management, we don't do lab management anymore. That has moved down into the underlying virtualization technologies. So really what we're looking at is how do we build on top of that, those underlying virtualization technologies, to integrate it into your application lifecycle management experience. And, we've, through our release management capabilities, done a lot of provisioning tasks. We've done Azure provisioning tasks. We're doing, we're going to support VMware. We're going to support System Center Virtual Machine Manager. And you'll be able to provision environments as part of your deployment and release process. We'll support things like Chef and Puppet, PowerShell DSC, all of those technologies that are underlying we'll integrate with to go do that provisioning. We'll then support deploying your app, running your test against those environments, etc. Now the other thing that we're doing is we're just getting ready to announce a new service that we're adding to Azure called the Dev Test Service. So it's pretty cool. The problem is this: you move to the cloud. Like in your normal world, you have your desktop, you have your two machines, and that's all you have. Now the downside is that's all you have. And if you need some other machines to test on, you kind of go ask somebody to get them, and it takes a long time. The cool thing about the cloud is I can just dynamically provision machines anytime I want. I can get as many as I want. The downside is I can have a lot of them. And you might have one person who used to have two machines now has 50. And from a cost perspective, you got to think about how do I manage that? How do I put quotas on that? How do I make sure I didn't just set up a 20 machine, environment and leave it running, for 3 months because I forgot that I had it up? So sort of the dev test labs experience is really about providing boundaries to help you manage your usage, automatically shut down VMs that aren't being used, control how many VMs people can have, put caps on total amount of usage within a month. And I think that's, and it's also going to make it super easy for me to create images of sort of key snapshots of configured software that I want, and then make it easy to just provision one of those at the, at sort of the drop of a hat. I think it's going to bring that value of the cloud elasticity to dev teams and make them way more productive.
Okay, thank you. By the way, you started answering my second question.
Okay.
So you guys did amazing job when a few years ago you switched it to 3-week release cadence.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm I'm really impressed about it. So it's like you're doing in 3 weeks just a real increment and publishing your product, so it's amazing. So one of the activities probably really tracking. I'm not talking about release management as management your pipeline, but tracking releases, making sure that what you included in that release are on track with those features you get. Because you get every 3 weeks we get pretty good release notes saying what you added, what you fixed it. So why you don't create that feature for us?
So I think, so first of all, we use our product. So it kind of already supports that model. And now one of the things you have to realize when you think about executing a service at this scale, it's like 25 microservices that sort of make up VS Online. And the number of people that are involved is you can't run it as a monolithic thing. You have to allow each of those services to work on their own at their own pace, deploy when they're ready, etc. So every team uses our Kanban stuff or our task board stuff to manage all of their work. They also have, as part of that, they have user stories that are the user stories they're delivering in that sprint, and they mark as part of that sprint which user stories are customer visible capabilities that are delivered in that sprint. So then I have a release manager who basically does a query, takes all the customer visible user stories and produces a set of release notes that describe what it is. And we publish them. If you go to visualstudio.com on the news page, you will see, you know, every 3 weeks, here's the 5 or 10 user stories that we delivered that are you know, end customer facing value. We also have internal customer stories, because every sprint will deliver some stuff that is on the service but not yet visible to customers, but we want to be testing it ourselves. So there's another flag, which is an internally visible story. You don't get to see those, but they come out. I see them because they come out in my internal sort of release report. So you can do it all. I think I definitely think we can provide tooling that makes that even better and more automated. And I expect with our, you know, as we get our new release management capability or the next version of it shipped here, well, again, in Connect in November, it's going to go into public preview on VS Online, and then early next year in TFS. I think as we get that kind of baked and going, I think we'll turn our attention to what we call release planning, which is the planning aspects that live on
exactly
top of
that.
That's
what I'm waiting for, because for enterprise, it's very important doing such things.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, good. All right, thanks a lot. It's great talking to you.
So we've had the Rangers come in and ask you loads of questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Any final kind of closing?
You know, I guess my closing remarks would be, you know, the Rangers is a program that we have that is really about helping customers figure out how to adopt VS Online, TFS, Visual Studio, and helping them adopt the modern practices that those tools enable. They've done just a tremendous job over the years providing guidance, providing tooling that kind of fills in the gaps. I think of things like the branching guidance that they've written two or three versions of over the years that have really helped frame the different ways you can think about branching and the different reasons to do it and the trouble you get into if you do it too much. Just very, very valuable guidance. How to structure team projects, which is a question I get like a million times. How do I structure all my work? And the Rangers have done guidance on that. It's just been an incredibly valuable volunteer effort of people who just want to help writing guidance, publishing it, sharing it, taking feedback and evolving it. It's been an important part of our success, and I'm really grateful to what the team has done.
It's definitely the passion that drives the Rangers. So once again, thank you guys for doing some fantastic stuff, and you've heard it from Brian Harry himself. So
thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you again for dropping by the
studio
as well.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, guys. See you next time. Bye-bye.